Good morning. For those of you who don't know me, I am Jason Nagel. Married Dana a year ago, and she brought me here to this wonderful place called Bethel almost 2 years ago. My story, I will be honest, it starts dark, but it will end up with light. When putting everything together, it's hard for me to kind of really put together the points that I really wanted to talk about. And so I kind of came up with an equation. I'm going back to school, and so chemistry and equations were great for me. But it's redemption plus forgiveness equals a life-lasting miracle. Everything changed for me 7 years ago on May 14, 2014. To kind of paint the picture, it was just 3 days after Mother's Day. I was out having some adult beverages with some coworkers. And to be honest, at this point in my life, I didn't value myself as a strong or godly individual. Honestly, by societal standards, I would have been generalized as unfit and unworthy of the blessings that God was about to bestow upon me. It was just after 2 a.m. when my friends and I were leaving the bar and talking outside when the last thing I remember was talking. Over the next 2 days, 48 hours, the only things I remember is my good friend Will driving me home, and I argued with him because I only had 2 beers that night. I could drive. I didn't know what had happened to me. I remember him helping carry me up the stairs to my apartment. I remember that night vomiting several times with a horrible headache. I couldn't sleep. I remember Will coming back to my apartment around 10 o'clock in the morning, pounding on the door until I opened the door. He forced me to go to the hospital. Now to let you know, I'm a very my work ethic is very strong. And I knew how to be to work within the next few hours. Well, I didn't want to go to the hospital. If I go to the ER, I couldn't make it in time, and I had to make money. So, of course, I argued. I remember my boss at the time, who actually is a really good family friend, asking me if she should call my family and let them know what's going on. I argued with her, told her, you know, it's all fine. I'm going to be fine. Didn't know what was going on. I didn't know I was being brought in for an emergency brain surgery. The next thing I really remember was waking up with a hand on my hand. Now, to let you guys know, at this point, my family lives in Oklahoma. My parents, my sister. And the last thing I would have said to my mom before this surgery was, I love you and happy Mother's Day. So they get a phone call, and basically what was told to them was that I was being brought in for emergency brain surgery with 30% chance to live. This individual who came up behind me, sucker punched me, knocked me out. When my head hit the concrete, about 35 to 40% of my skull was crushed. By the time I made it to the hospital, my brain was swelling and was hemorrhaging. Within this 30% chance to live, the neurologist basically told my parents that I had a 100% chance that I would either be in a wheelchair the rest of my life, or I would need occupational, physical, and speech therapy for the remainder of my life. They also told my parents that they were going to put me into an induced coma for about 2 weeks to let my brain swell reduce. Now, this is where that lifelong miracle really kind of began for me. The only neurosurgeon on call that day in Aurora happened to be the best neurosurgeon in the Denver area. I woke up within 48 hours of the brain surgery. I beat that 30% chance to live. Until this day, I have not needed any occupational, physical, or speech therapy. And honestly, I came out of this with a measly scar across my head that I will wear as almost a crown to say that I kind of made it through, because it wasn't my miracle. This miracle was God's miracle. To kind of go back to the equation, the redemption plus forgiveness equals a life-lasting miracle. Since I was in junior high, I had it in my mind that I was unworthy of God's love. I remember kind of being in youth group one day and just, you know, kind of going to my knees and saying, I'm not worthy of this. This is too much. I can't take this. I'm not worthy of it. I also remember a moment around 2005 that an individual that I had been dating, her and I split, and she told me, this was a couple months later, but that she had aborted a child that we were having. Because of the pain and everything I was feeling at that moment, I basically had offered my soul to Satan at that moment, because I didn't want to bear this pain anymore. I wanted him to take the pain and so I can move on. And let me tell you, that's not a good way to go. On this day, on 5/14, God showed a man who didn't believe he was savable, that he was worth saving and worthy of God's love. He redeemed me on that day for everything prior and had a plan for me. As for the forgiveness piece, because of what God did for me and the forgiveness he gave to me, the individual who did this to me, I've been able to forgive. And I will put it on today and every day until the day I die, that if there's one person I could pray and ask God to forgive and to change that person's life, it's the individual who did this to me. Ultimately, though, to think that God still works those kinds of miracles in everyday life, whether we see them or not, it's amazing to see, to be a part of it in my life and to see what has transpired since. Actually, a couple weeks ago, my dad and I were talking. I let him know that I was sharing my story today at church. And, you know, my dad sat back and, you know, said something very weird and truthful, I guess, is the best way to say it. But my family, and I think those around me, can sit back and say that we are thankful for what this individual did to me that day. Without that, I wouldn't have a miracle that I could share of what God is doing on a daily basis. And everything that I have done from then is, it's for God. It's, you know, the Ephesians 5:14, it's the awake, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and let Christ shine, and Christ will shine upon you. I have been able to meet the woman of my life, the most beautiful woman in the world. I have lost 130 pounds. I've changed my life from what it was to the man I am today, who's somebody who can stand in front of you guys and say, My life is right, and it's going in the right direction because of what he has done. I'm going back to school. And amongst all that, I've been able to gain respect from my father, from my mother, from my wife, to those who are very dear to me. And the only thing that I can hope that I have done is to make him proud as well, because that's really the only one that matters. And every day it's a battle to make sure I do it for the right reasons. And the miracle he bestowed upon me is a blessing that, for me, I've wanted to share with all of you for a while. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Good morning. What makes a personal story into a faith story? I want to share with you a personal story this morning from 30-some years ago. And it involves me being forced to choose to believe in and follow the leading of someone that I couldn't see, or someone that I couldn't hear, at least not with my ears. And in my mind, that's what makes this a faith story. I'm going to read the story from a book I wrote a few years back to let my grandkids know how I became the person that I am today. Bob Cook was one who encouraged me to make this into a book. I didn't intend to write a book when I started. Some of you have my book, and you may have read this story, and for those of you, I'll just ask you this. This will be a refresher for you. In the fall of 1989, our small construction company was very busy. We were nearly finished with our second house that year, and the lady was extremely picky. It was a custom home and had a plan that we had drawn from their ideas, and it became very flexible as we went along, and she would complain about all kinds of things. I arrived home late for supper on a cold October evening from that job. We'd been finishing concrete, which had taken longer than expected to dry, and that made me late. Karen and the girls had already had supper, and Karen was leaving to attend a meeting. I sat down to eat, knowing that I had a couple hours of work in the office which needed to be completed before morning, including an estimate for another customer. The mail from the day was there on the table, and on top was a flyer from New Tribes Mission about a service possibility in Papua New Guinea, a country halfway around the world. And it said, "We're needing people with construction experience." And I laughed to myself at the irony of that. Our small company was finishing a very difficult house, had two other jobs promised, and I had two meetings that week, including school board, which would take at least 4 hours. Quarterly reports were almost overdue at the IRS, and I was tired. Throwing the flyer back on the pile, I finished eating and went to my office to start the estimate. Let's see. I need the file that I had this morning. It will be under the customer's name since we worked for him before. I pulled open the file drawer and went to the proper place, fully expecting it to be right there in front of me. It wasn't there. Now, Karen had told me several times that I just needed to look a bit more carefully when I couldn't find something. And she usually told me this right after I had called her to help and she found something that was right there in front of my nose. But she wasn't here and I needed to get this done. And I promised myself I would find the file. After nearly 30 minutes of carefully removing all the files in the drawer, opening each one to make sure that I hadn't accidentally stuck the one I needed inside of another one, I had had it. The file I needed was nowhere to be found. It was gone, it was missing, and the customer would not be happy. I got up and walked outside, and looking up at the star-studded sky, I yelled, "Why?" And no one answered, at least not in words that I could actually hear with my ears. But as I looked at the stars and felt myself calming a bit, that flyer came to my mind. The one which lay on my kitchen table with that impossible message, "We need your help," in Papua New Guinea. Did I mention that that's halfway around the globe? And I was feeling somewhat better by now, and I actually chuckled at the absurdity and the impossibility of that situation. And then it hit me. I had an idea. When in doubt, make a deal with God, one so impossible that it's impossible. I had just spent way too much time looking for a file that for all purposes had disappeared. Even though I had it just that morning, it wasn't on my desk, it wasn't on the floor, not in the file cabinet or anywhere in my office. I knew because I had looked and looked well. But since I was used to talking with God like he was right there with me, I said something like this. "You know everything about me and about all the situations I face, so you know about the need in New Guinea and the fact that my skills do match that need. You also know it looks totally impossible for me to actually go there. But if this is you just trying to get my attention, here's my deal. I'm going to go into the office just like I did a while before, and I'm going to sit in my chair, and I'm going to turn to the file cabinet and open the drawer and look for the file where it should be, just like before. And if the file's there, then I'll take that as your message to pursue an impossible dream. there. I had done it. I could put that flyer challenge out of my mind and at least get the rest of the work done for the evening, and I'd deal with the missing file when Karen was there to help. I returned to the office, sat down, and almost didn't look for the file. Remember, it wasn't there because I had looked. But something wouldn't let me off that easily. I had made a deal, after all. So I turned, opened the drawer, went to the R tab, opened the space just like I had done before. Excuse me. And there it was. Not hidden in some unlikely spot. Not behind or under anything, just there, where I fully expected it to be the first time I sat down. I slowly pulled it out, placed it on my desk, bowed my head on top of it, and cried. I cried for my lack of belief in the impossible, and I cried because in that moment I could see no way for God's direct and to-the-point answer to become reality. Fortunately for me, the God I serve and the Master I follow did not leave me in that state. When Karen arrived home, she noticed something was rather out of the ordinary with me, and I told her I needed to share something with her that didn't make sense and probably wouldn't make sense to her either. She listened while I filled her in on the story and then reminded me that we need to listen when God speaks, even if we don't really understand or can't figure it all out. And that experience began for us what would become another time of questions and answers that helped to calm and to overcome our fears. The work questions and the money questions were resolved in amazing ways. We had seen God provide funds for our time with the girls in Columbia several years before, but this time it didn't work out quite that smoothly. A couple of weeks before I was to leave to attend the San Francisco orientation, I was about $900 short of the needed funds. It was a Saturday, and I was home finishing some things in preparation for being gone for over a month when a car drove in and a lady got out and came toward the house. I went out and recognized the lady as the one whose home we had recently finished, the one that had given us so much static. But she smiled and held out an envelope. "I hear what you're doing. I want to help out," she said. I thanked her. And after chatting a bit about the house, which she really loved by now, she drove away. Went into the office, opened the note, expected to see maybe $25 or so, and did a double take to see a check for $500. Unexpected and appreciated, but still $400 short of the $900 I needed. So after a talk with my brother, we agreed that I could borrow the money from our business truck account. I paid the remaining balance. 2 weeks later, I was in San Francisco. 4 days after that, the other team members and I were on our flight to Guam, where we'd catch another flight to New Guinea. About 4 hours into the flight, the captain came on to tell us that we were landing in Honolulu since there was a typhoon near Guam, and we were loaded too heavily to fly all the way to Manila in the Philippine Islands, which had become our new destination. On arrival, we found out that our entire team with some other passengers were being deplaned and would spend the night in Honolulu to catch the next available flight to Manila. After getting a good night's rest, we arrived at breakfast to hear our team leader announce that the airline would be providing each one of us with what they called denied boarding compensation. So we talked among ourselves about how much we could expect, with guesses ranging from $50 to $100. When they finally passed around the checks, my jaw dropped. I saw the amount. You're there ahead of me, $400. Now, once again, I had two choices. I could feel really lucky to have $400, or I could say, "Thank you, God, for providing once again exactly what I needed to do, what you asked me to do." We flew out the next morning, and after spending a night in Manila, we caught a midnight flight the next night and arrived at Port Moresby on New Guinea's south coast early in the morning, only a couple of days behind schedule. After another night at the mission guest house, we flew up into the mountains on two separate planes to catch rides to their mission base, where we would work for the next 4 weeks. When I stepped off the plane, a familiar-looking guy with a big grin walked up, held out his hand, and said, "Hi, Jim. Imagine meeting you here." And yeah, that was Norm. New Tribes Mission, this is an aside, New Tribes Mission had a language school in Missouri, and we had gotten well acquainted with a couple who would come to our house and go deer hunting. They needed the meat, and they would come up and hunt deer with us, and then they asked if they could bring this friend along. This was Norm. Hadn't seen him for 4 or 5 years. But he was now the construction and maintenance person for the New Guinea team, and he had a story for me. As we compared notes, things began to fall into place in my mind. The same night I spent back in October trying to understand what God might be saying, Norm was on his knees talking to the same God, just halfway around the world and at a different time of day. He'd experienced a severe back injury requiring surgery in Australia, was just starting to recover when he was notified that our team was coming to do construction at the base and that he would be in charge. And this was his prayer. God, you know, I can't do this on my own. Please speak to someone with construction or supervisory skills to come and help me. We have a house to build, along with a large warehouse storage building in 4 weeks, and I may not be walking by then. Please, Lord, take care of the situation. And he left it in the hands of the only one he knew who could make that happen. Now, I don't pretend to understand how God put that all together, nor do I understand how a file can disappear and reappear in the same evening and persuade me to make a decision I would never in a million years have made on my own. I do know that Norm and I were two men on opposite sides of the earth who both loved and attempted to serve the same God, the creator of the universe. I do know that we had been brought together in the past, had never expected to see one another again, and then were brought together in an extraordinary way to bring about a work that needed to be done as part of God's kingdom on earth. That's good enough for me. So several weeks later, I was back at home in Missouri, back to my business, back to all the schedules and the meetings, but forever changed. I was better educated as to how missionaries work in extremely difficult surroundings to share the message of God's love and acceptance of all of God's people. I was also more aware that God loved all the people that I met in my daily life and more challenged to share my understandings of that love as I went about doing what I could to follow Jesus.